Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week, born in Exeter, Great Britain, studied political science at Leeds University and nonprofit leadership at Harvard Business School and Kennedy School of Government. A portrait artist, his works have been exhibited in the Art Institute of Chicago and the Smithsonian Institute in Washington, D.C. He's the author of Somos Brazil, A Human Atlas, and his latest project is I Detroit, which highlights 100 Detroiters who are quietly making a difference. His name, Marcus Lyon. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Marcus Lyon, who's a most fascinating and likable chap. Marcus, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad?
Very good. I was born in Exeter, grew up in rural Great Britain, very much a country boy. Didn't really move to a city until I was in my very late teens. We were three boys. Sadly, both of my brothers were not well as children. They had a genetic condition, which meant that they suffered from something called congenital adrenal hyperplasia. So my mum and my dad had a bit of a journey there, supporting those children. We were all very close, and very sadly, we lost Andrew, my eldest brother, when I was six and when he was eight. And that was a powerful moment in my life. It was a moment of change, a moment of inflection, left me really in search of some things. And I think it took until my early teens when I was first given a camera and was given the opportunity to find a voice that people couldn't take away from me, a voice that meant I could talk about the things that I felt were important, a voice to represent those who I felt needed representing. So I think that red carpet that's the camera was really the release for me as a young man from some of the burdens of losing a brother so young.
I quote you now, "The camera is my voice. It has been a savior." Marcus, why so a savior?
Well, I think many young men, many teenagers are searching for answers. It can be a confusing time of life. And I think when the camera came along, it was a savior of a young man's journey. It gave me a purpose and a sense of self-worth, gave me an opportunity to be heard. So I think it's really been the red carpet to pretty much anything and anybody I ever wanted access to. So in that way, I think it is a savior. It's been an enormous gift.
I've heard it said that a camera stops time.
Well, I've said this a few times. When you think about a small boy, and you think about a small boy who's lost his best friend, and he's trying to process that deep and dark knowledge of the brevity of life and the preciousness of every moment, and trying to create some sense out of it. And then he finds a camera and he can take a picture and he can literally stop time. He can stop that inevitable journey towards death. So for me, maybe not for others, but for me personally, speaking personally, the camera allowed me that ability to stop time and to reflect and to connect and to tell stories.
You've taken a lot of clicks in your life, and you've connected with a lot of famous people, a number of prime ministers, Queen Elizabeth. But I want to ask you about Margaret Thatcher, The Iron Will Lady.
Yes, I was commissioned by an American company to take a photograph of Margaret Thatcher at a fancy country house in just north of London. And I was quite a young photographer. It was a pretty punchy commission for someone in his mid-20s. And I remember it was a bit of a make-or-break moment. You know, it was the first big commission of somebody very well-known, the great and the good, as they say. And I chose to take the picture of her in front of a window, backlit. Obviously, I had other light at the front, but it was a backlit thing, picture. And she looked at me and she said, I don't think I should have my photograph taken in front of a window. I don't think this is the correct position. And me being me, I just said what I thought, which at the time I thought that was the worst thing you could have said, Marcus. And I looked her in the face and I said, ma'am, I'll let you run the country if you let me take the picture. And she looked at me, and like lots of powerful people, I mean, it was a lesson I learned very young, like lots of powerful people, she didn't get stood up to that many times. People didn't tell her the truth very often. They didn't speak back truth. And I'd spoken back the truth, which was actually I was there as the expert. I was commissioned to take the photo. That was my job. She had another job, and she really respected. She gave me a little smile, a little wink, and I took the picture. It was a fine portrait. Everybody liked it. And the rest is history.
And 25 years later, Marcus, you are still telling it the way you see it. So,
thank
all
you,
right.
Sir.
Your eyes see so much more than our eyes see. How so?
That's a fascinating question. I think that when you're really practiced at anything, whatever it might be, you do have the ability to access deeper insight. And I've spent my life taking portraits, listening to people, practicing the process of seeing them in as authentic a way as I can possibly do. And I think I'm getting better every day. I think I can get better still. I'm now in my mid-50s, so I've still got quite a lot of practice to do. So I think it's in the nature of the game. You practice what your art is, you build your skill set, you listen carefully to yourself and those around you, and you'll always see more things every day.
A person's eyes are the windows to their soul.
Eye contact's key. I love taking candid portraits, reportage portraits. It's fun. You can play with light and composition and structure. Do all sorts of interesting things visually. But the reality is I love eye-to-eye contact and eye-to-eye contact portraiture. I like portraits. I like creating portraits that allow the viewer to look deep in to that person's eye and in that way access some form of relationship.
We're talking to Marcus Lyon. When we come back, we're going to take him back 2,000 years. And I'm Jack Prasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Prasula, and we're with Marcus Lyon, whose works are held in both private and international collections, including the Art Institute of Chicago and the Smithsonian Institution in Washington, D.C. Marcus, let's go back 2,000 years and magically have a camera. And you get to follow the Jewish carpenter for 33 years of his life. But you only get to take three pictures of him. What are they?
Well, Jack, that's a real tough one, but I've got an idea. I think at the end of the day, I've got to feed my own children here, haven't I? So I'm going to take a birth picture, because that one's going to be, everybody's going to want a copy of that one. So that's going to deal with the commerce. I've now looked after my family and my people. And I'm not going to take the final picture because everybody's going to be there. They'll all have taken that picture. It'll be everywhere. So I'm going to do a quiet picture of this young carpenter, deep in thought, somewhere very private, just the two of us. So that's the second picture. And then I'm going to be a little cheeky, because I've got a third picture, haven't I, Jack?
Yes, you do.
I've got a third picture. Okay. I'm going to give the camera to him. I'm going to ask him to take my portrait. And that's my third portrait, my third picture.
Amazing. There was a long chapter in your life with Amnesty International and the International Children's Trust in South America. Tell us about that chapter of your life.
My early days with the camera were very much driven by a 9 and 3 model. 9 months of commerce and 3 months of activity in areas of social justice. And I met an incredible woman, Sarah Thomas de Benitez, and her husband, Gabriel Benitez, who ran a street children project in Mexico. And I worked with them extensively over the next 10 years. And through that work as a photographer in the slums and ghettos across the world, I become somewhat of an expert in issues to do with very disadvantaged children. And was then asked to join the boards of directors of various organizations that were championing their rights and advocating for more care for them and their issues. So I ended up working with the International Children's Trust as their chairman, and then the Consortium for Street Children as their chairman, doing global advocacy work, sometimes with grassroots leaders, sometimes with the UN. Totally aside from my photography work, but the photography had been the red carpet that had taken me into those leadership spaces. And it was at that stage that I went back to Harvard and the Kennedy School of Government and tried to do some more leadership training so that I could offer a more diverse and deeper skill set to the leadership piece, which was beginning to sit quite comfortably either side of my photography and my personal life.
Marcus, you've spent 20-plus years profiling street children. And there's over 100 million of them in the world today. What have they taught you?
I think the street children piece is absolutely key for my life. I mean, it's part of a healing process of giving back to children that I think is driven from that early childhood loss of Andrew. I think there's a deep connection there about trying to add value. But I think the most beautiful reflection that comes from it for me is that there's hope for all of us. There's hope in everything, because these are children who really have nothing. No parents, no state support, no home, nothing. And yet the kids that I've met, witnessed, had the honor to photograph and support are actually extraordinarily resilient, extraordinarily entrepreneurial, extraordinarily passionate about life. Very, very dark spaces, very dark stories, many that would make us cry out loud every day of the week if we heard them. But they're children that can transcend those dark spaces and live a full life. And I think that's really amazing and beautiful and gives us all hope that wherever we fall and however we fall, there's always redemption.
A number of times when I've had somebody on the show that's served the poorest of the poor around the world, one thing they commonly say is there is no despair in the third world countries. Despair is a first world country phenomenon. Why so?
I think back to the townships of South Africa. When you asked that question, Jack, and I went and met some people who were dealing with some of the most entrenched problems of drugs, poverty, racism, the highest levels of social injustice and inequity. And yet when I was welcomed there, I was treated like a returning son. So that human warmth and that desire to connect with others seems to transcend the desperate poverty and situations that, many of these people are in. I think in a sense, when you are desperately poor and you're living in really dark spaces, there's no room for despair. You have to author, hopefully co-author, your life with hope and with trust that the future will be better, because that's the only way that you can go. It's the only direction. There is no place lower.
We're talking to Marcus Lyon. If you want to learn more, www.marcuslyon.com. Marcus has traveled to over 90 countries, and one of those was across Brazil. You traveled over 13,700 miles across Brazil. Please.
About 5 years ago, my wife and I, my wife is a Brazilian, I had the great fortune to meet her on a bus in India, and we fell in love, and we now have two small Brazinglish children, mainly being brought up in Britain. So we
felt... Do you remember the first thing you said to your wife on that bus?
Yeah, I can't repeat it, I'm afraid. No. She was an angel, really, I promise you. The first time I met her, I walked away thinking I have just met an angel. And I was lucky enough to be able to turn that meeting into the relationship of my life, the key relationship of my life. But once we had the kids, we thought a lot about how we could share our cultures between Britain and Brazil. And we realized there was an opportunity for me and her to author, with a lot of support from many other people, a significant portrait project in Brazil. And we decided to create a human atlas of Brazil, Somos Brazil, human atlas of a nation, through a series of 100 nominated portraits taken across Brazil. With the amazing support of the NGO Image Magica and the incredible Camila Pastorelli, we were able to produce and bring together a remarkable group of voices, portraits, and genetic codes. Because for everyone we met, we mapped their ancestral journey through an ancestry DNA process partnered with Family Tree DNA in Houston, Texas.
So each of these 100 people that you profile, you, in the book, Somos Brazil, S-O-M-O-S, Brazil, you have a full-page portrait. Then you have a DNA mapping and you have a one-page write-up on them. But talk about the app on the phone.
Very good. With modern technology, there are all sorts of new ways that we can access information. So with the Somos Brazil process, what we did is we mapped the sound pieces onto an image-activated app. You swipe your device, your mobile phone, across the portrait of, let's say, Jack, and Jack speaks back to you. We give a voice to the voiceless. We want to create portraits that have the ability to create relationships with the viewer, but give the opportunity for the portrait sitter to have a role in that relationship. In so many ways, the photograph is the chattel of the viewer. We look at a portrait of Jack and we make our minds up about what we think about Jack. You never get a chance to speak or say anything. So in this process, what we do is we give you the opportunity to tell your story in your voice.
Sound-enabled portraits. We're talking to Marcus Lyon and he says he takes okay snaps. And I'm Jack Brasua. And this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Brasula, and we're with Marcus Lyon, the author of Somos Brazil, A Human Atlas. If we wanted to highlight one of these special people profiled in Somos Brazil, who would it be?
When you bring 100 together and you do it through the process we use, the nomination process, everyone's remarkable. So it's always difficult to find one. But for the purposes of today, and in great respect to you and your listeners, I'm going to choose Ana Cláudia Arantes. Now, Ana Cláudia was born knowing a lot about the difficulties of health, because she had a grandmother who had an arterial condition, which meant she had constant pain. And Anna witnessed this. This was around her young life. And she saw her grandmother go into hospital and have a double leg amputation. So Anna, in respect for this, cut all the legs off her dolls in her bedroom and turned her bedroom into a little infirmary, a little place to nurture and look after her grandmother. And she turned to her grandmother and she promised her that when she grew up, she would be a doctor and she would heal people of the pain that her grandmother had felt. Anna Claudia was given her doctorate, was qualified as a doctor, the day her grandmother died. And Anna Claudia has gone on to be the most significant palliative care doctor in the whole of Brazil, known across the country for her beautiful, gentle, loving care of people in dark and desperate spaces. She is just a beautiful, beautiful human being, someone who's given so much of her life to others. And for today's purposes, I think that story suffices.
One more, if you will, from Somos Brazil. Leila Velez, please.
Leila Velez. Well, Leila Velez was brought up the daughter of a doorman. A doorman, African-Brazilian, from the Northeast, who looked after the door at one of the smart tower blocks on the beaches, on the edges of the beaches of Rio de Janeiro. So she witnessed the dark nature of the social injustice between different people, people with wealth and people without wealth in Brazil, in modern Brazil. And she has ended up building a cosmetic company serving the Afro-Brazilian community with skincare products and hair care products. And she's built that business, Beleza Natural, from employing single mothers from the favelas. So she has created a highly successful commercial organization built like a social enterprise, changing those young women's lives, but also providing a product and a service to people who did not have that set of products or that service beforehand. So Leila Velez feels like a really good second choice.
And there are 2,300 of those single women that she employs. Amazing. All right, let's go to your latest current chapter, which is entitled I.Detroit. It's a human atlas of an American city. Marcus, with all due respect, you're a Brit, very likable, you're white, you're middle-aged, and you know nothing about Detroit. Why and how Detroit?
I was very lucky to meet the amazing Mark Davidoff on a leadership course in Bradford, England. Mark is one of your city elders, a great gentleman and a great friend. And Mark heard about my Human Atlas work, and he brought a copy of the book to the city to show to the Kresge Foundation. And when they saw it, they said, this is a remarkable vehicle to take the unsung heroes and those moving the needle in this city and explain their stories in their own voices. So Rip Rapson and Wendy Jackson at Kresge contacted me, asked me to come and visit. I felt very honored to come here. I know quite a bit about Michigan because I have a sister who lives in Traverse City, and I've been visiting here since my early 20s. So I had a sense of the importance of Detroit as a space and a place, especially in terms of the American dream. But what I really did think at the time was exactly what you said. Why me? How can I find the voice to tell this story? Am I the right person? And what we did early on is we put together 50 community leaders in a meeting room, and they grilled me. They asked me all those questions, Jack. They roasted me for an hour and a half. And afterwards, they came up and they gave me a big fat hug and they said, amazing, we love it. How can we support you to tell our story in the way you're going to tell it? So that was critical. Without the validation of those community leaders, without that moment to explore the risks of a white middle-class Brit coming here to take the journey of Detroit as a story forward, without that chance to be asked those difficult questions, I think we wouldn't be here now. And so many of those people have stood up and been counted right through our nomination process. So every single person in the work, in the I Detroit project, has been nominated by other Detroiters. So I have no voice in that creative part of bringing those 100 voices together. It's the voice of the people of Detroit saying, Marcus, please will you take these people's photographs? Please will you tell these people's stories? And I think without that element, it's very, very difficult to think that I could do anything powerful here at all. If I just came and chose randomly a group of interesting people to me, I don't think this project would really have the legs. I think it has legs and it can go somewhere and it can be something because it is the voice of Detroit speaking. I'm purely the man who delivers the message.
Once again, the name is I.Detroit. 100 Detroit change agents. Few, if any, of the 100 Detroiters are well known, but they highlight the human capital of the city of Detroit. You've selected the 100 people. A lot more than 100 were nominated by these 50 leaders. Marcus, what was that criteria? And talk about the selection process.
It's incredibly important when you're honoring people and asking them to step up, to realize that when you honor one person, you don't honor another. And I think it's incredibly important to be extremely intentional about the processes we're going through. So from that early meeting, we brought together 14 individuals who sat on a curatorial committee, a nomination committee, and they helped guide me through the process of choosing the 100. So we had well over 200 people nominated, all of who deserved to have their stories told. All who deserved to have their stories told. But we needed to pick 100, and we needed them to represent every corner of the city. So Camilla, my producer, Joe, my sound and photography assistant, and I spent a great deal of time mapping the first 80. We then built the table, so to speak, and sat those 80 at the table, and we asked ourselves the question of who was missing from the table. And then we went through a secondary phase of nomination to find the final 20 to sit at the table, to occupy the spaces in the city, the functions, the workspaces that were not accounted for in the first 80 in phase one. So we tried to, as elegantly as is humanly possible, through listening and being guided by people here in the city who know the city, we built our 100. And I do hope that when people see it, they realize that we've chosen many people as representatives of many other people. So in a sense, we wanted individuals who spoke for a lot of folks out in the neighborhoods across the city, from the far east side to the far west side, from southwest Detroit to down by the river, from the Cass Corridor to Highland Park, from Osborne to Zug Island.
We're talking to Marcus Lyon, and he and his team have worked on this project for a year already, and the book will not be out till mid-2020. When we come back, we're going to ask him to say a few thoughts about a few of these 100 Detroit lovers of people. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Marcus Lyon. If you want to learn more, www.marcuslyon.com. I Detroit, a human atlas, 100 Detroit change agents. If we could talk about a few, First one, Dana Wilson.
Dana is a remarkable young woman from the Redford area, and she has been campaigning for equity in the education space. So she went to Washington. She spoke beautifully and eloquently. I think she might have even been less than 18 at the time when she did it, about some of the bigger issues about the public school system here in Detroit and across the country. She's going to be one of the great leaders of the city going forward. But right now, she's someone who's had 8 million hits on the video that was recorded of her speaking up in Washington about the inequities of education in the city of Detroit. Amazing young woman.
Satori
Shakur has got one of the best backstories of anyone I've ever met, let alone the incredible 100i Detroiters. What she's really doing right now is she's a storyteller, and she runs an incredible program at the Charles H. Wright. I think it goes out every month or two, and it's the Secret Society of Twisted Storytellers. And she brings the voices of Detroit to the stage at the Wright to talk about their lives and their visions for the future. She's an amazing storyteller herself, and her own story of working for Funkadelic and being part of an incredible history of musicality in the city, right through to the work she's now doing in the communities. She's a remarkable visionary and a beautiful, beautiful friend.
Carlos
Nielbok is a immigrant to the city, in a way, a bit like me. He was the son of a German woman and a black African GI from Detroit. And he came at 24 to the city to search for his dad, Clarence, and he's never gone back. But Carlos's story is so multi-layered. He trained in Germany before he came to the United States to be an architectural metal worker and a more skilled craftsman and artisan I've rarely met. He's the most incredible creator and visionary, building new wind turbines, building beautiful gates, actually building an amazing museum of African art here in the city. Carlos is credited with doing much of the work in the Fisher Building, repairing the architectural metalwork that we enjoyed as we came here to see you today, Jack. He is a true visionary and is creating amazing, amazing art in the city.
One more, Maiowa.
Maiowa Lisa Reynolds, remarkable, remarkable woman. Born on 12th Street, saw the changes that came in 1967, witnessed that huge, huge point of inflection in the city, and chose to stay and serve the community, to find a voice through the arts and dance, and she is now the director of the Detroit Art School. She has seen it from both sides, and really is a remarkable visionary who supports the kids and the educational space here to give that youth the chance to really shine and really build something special here in Detroit.
Marcus Lyon, what has amazed you the most about Detroit and its people?
The most amazing thing about Detroit is how small a large city it is. Everybody knows everyone here. People are interconnected and serve each other in such a powerful way. In terms of its people, the thing I'm most amazed by is the generosity. This is a truly warm human city. Myself and my team have been welcomed here and looked after here like we couldn't hope to have been looked after. It's been the most incredible place to spend 4 months of our lives.
The few times we've been together, I've been fascinated by you. I really admire you. One of the many things I admire you for is you are a phenomenal listener. How do we become great listeners?
I think that's another one that we all need to practice on. I'm spending a lot of the time at the moment working on my listening, opening my heart out to people. I think probably the key to it all is to have love in your heart. And if you love the people who you're with, then you listen better. The other thing I think that's really important is the fear of the stranger. I think that much of our modern society preaches to us about being fearful of the stranger. And I'm bringing my kids up to honour the stranger, to welcome the stranger. Right now, my family, we've got a refugee from Eritrea, Ethiopia, living with us, a young woman, 18-year-old woman called Imana. And my kids' lives are being changed by having a stranger in the house, offering our space, our love, our home, to be a place for her to build a new home in a new country. I think that's the key. Love the one you're with and open your doors to strangers.
Following up on that, I quote you, we are all interconnected.
One of the really beautiful aspects of the iDetroit project is the ancestral DNA journeys that we're sending everybody on. And within that ancestral journey, we can see that we are all brothers and sisters, not others.
I quote you last time, leadership is the ability to take the light you have been given and to shine it on other people's achievements.
I felt this for a long, long while, Jack, that real leadership, true leadership, is the ability to give voice to those around you who are not being heard. And so that's why I like that analogy of taking a spotlight. It's a little bit photographic, but taking that light you've been given the privilege to hold and turning it and shining on those who will come next. The idea of the Human Atlas Project is really very simple. The idea is to give those who are coming along now, the next generation, the chance to author, to co-author their leadership, not in the shadow of those who came before, but in honor of them. And I think that shining a light, the leaders being given the ability to shine a light on that next generation of leaders, that is truly a life worth living.
Marcus Lyon, that one picture that the Jewish carpenter took of you 2,000 years ago, I believe it's mounted in heaven. And under it, it says, this is a man who truly learned how to love people. Keep it up.
Thank you very much, Jack. It's been an honor being on your show. Thank you.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohem. Believe in yourself.